being without your phone. So be with us.
So far from you, yet to me you were always so close. I wandered lost in the dark. I closed my eyes to all the signs you put in my way. I walked every day further and further away from you. Ooh, Allah, you brought me home. I thank with every breath I take.
Today is Sunday, 26th of Rabiul Thani, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Calendar, corresponding to the 27th of May, 1404 of the Islamic Solar History Calendar, and the 19th of October, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian Calendar. As the ritual of this program, at this time we'll listen to one of the verses of the Holy Quran and then the important point of this verse. Then we straightly go to our topic. Today, verse 86 of chapter An-Naml.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Alam yaraw anna ja'alna al-layla liyaskunu fihi wan-nahara mubsira. Inna fi dhalika la'ayatin liqaumin.
Do they not see that we made the night that they may rest therein, and the day giving sight? Indeed, in that are signs for a people who believe.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The function of the darkness of night in man's tranquility of nerves and the light of the day in man's activity are the scientific issues which have been proved today. Night is one of the bounties and mercy of Allah upon people, and it is the sign of divine knowledge and power. Thus, ignoring the function of the night is an example of the ignorant rejection. These verses refer to the subjects of origin and end, the signs of power and greatness of Allah in the world of existence.
Life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you to doubt you would be the worst to stay. Deep inside I know amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong. A world that often lies, as I don't need anyone, anything in life but you.
Today is a special and nomophobia, the fear of being without your phone. Dear friend, in fact, the term nomophobia was coined fairly recently to describe the fear of being without your phone. This includes not just losing, forgetting, or breaking your phone, but also being outside of mobile phone contact. It's a growing concern in a world where always being connected seems more important than ever before. When people lose their phone, when their mobile runs out of battery, or when they are in an area with no cellular coverage, it can lead to feelings of stress and anxiety, or even feelings of fear or panic. This fear of being without a mobile device is often considered a sign of problematic digital device use. which some experts believe may have a detrimental impact on mental health or well-being.
Have you ever felt anxious without your phone? If so, you might be experiencing something known as nomophobia. Origins of nomophobia. This term is a portmanteau, a blend of words fusing no mobile with phobia, and it describes the fear or anxiety of being without one's mobile phone or being unable to use it for some reason. Quite a modern concept, isn't it? The emergence of the term nomophobia can be traced back to 2008. Yes, it's a phenomenon of the digital age, born out of our increasing reliance on our smartphones. It all started with a study conducted by the UK Post Office. The study revealed that over half of mobile phone users in the United Kingdom, to be exact, 53%, experienced anxiety when they were unable to use their mobile phones. This feeling of unease without their handheld devices was something new, something unexpected, and it needed a name. Hence, nomophobia was born. Now, it's important to understand that nomophobia, despite its name, is not a recognized psychological disorder, at least not yet. But it has garnered significant attention due to its growing prevalence and its impact on individuals' mental health. We live in a world where smartphones have become a lifeline, a constant companion. There are calendars, our entertainment hubs, our cameras, our news sources, even our wallets. They've seamlessly integrated into our daily lives, making them almost indispensable. The more we depend on our smartphones, the more we fear being without them. It's a bit ironic, isn't it?
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes. Today's special.
In this part, we look at the ways to reduce phone separation anxiety. Don't jump to using your phone to look up every detail right away. If you and your friends can't remember the name of that actor or movie at dinner and instinctively reach for your phone to look it up, perhaps wait, enjoy dinner, and give everyone a chance to think of it later. Chances are some interesting conversations will be spurred by not answering the question right away, and in the meantime, someone might actually have fun remembering it without relying on a smartphone. Write a letter instead of texting. One of the deep fears underlying the fear of not having a working smartphone is losing connection with someone. Before we had smartphones, we had other ways of connecting with people, writing letters or a postcard. Why we can't be without our phones. The usefulness of mobile phones plays a key role in this fear of being without one's phone. The smartphones are capable of doing so much. People use their phones to stay in touch, to research things that are interested in, to conduct business, to stay organized, to share personal information, and even to manage money. Because people now turn to their phones for so many important tasks, it is perhaps not surprising that people fear being without their devices. Being without your phone can leave people feeling cut off and isolated from important aspects of their life, including friends, family, work, finances, and information.
Try these steps to go from nomophobe to productive worker again. Number one, stop texting at work. Everywhere I go, people are head down texting. In cars, stores, airports, even in their offices. If you're not texting a team member about work at work, it's considered gold breaking. When I was 21 years old, I remember getting in trouble with my manager for using the work phone to make a personal call. Today, boundaries have blurred. However, using your phone to conduct personal business during the day is basically the same. So unless your smartphone is your work phone, you don't have an office phone, reserve its use to breaks, personal time, and lunch. Texting during a meeting when you're supposed to be paying attention to the people around you is a big no-no. If necessary, put your smartphone in a drawer when you're in the office. Feeling antsy? Turn it into useful energy by focusing on work. If you need to check your phone due to a personal situation you need to monitor, do so rarely. Smokers can limit their craving for nicotine to a couple of short breaks per day, so you can surely control a purely psychological addiction, such as constantly checking Facebook or Twitter, the same way. Number two, deactivate email and text alerts. If you're already sitting in front of your computer at work, why do you need your phone to tell you that you received an email? Why do you need your computer to tell you either? Would you be checking your email during the day anyway? Turning off alerts will begin to pull you out of addiction mode. As a consultant, when I'm on the road traveling, of course I have my phone on, but I don't need my phone to tell me 100 times to check my email. I'll check it several times a day and handle everything that's come in at once, not one at a time. That's highly inefficient. I also don't get alerts or emails from my social media platforms, like Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, that I just received a message because I'm going to check those anyway. Why duplicate everything? Within each SM platform, turn off the notifications to email and the alerts on your phone. Stopping and checking your phone every few minutes is an obsessive behavior. If you don't hear the noise, you might have a chance to focus more than a few minutes. You decide when the best time will be to check everything. Number three, use airplane mode. Your Wi-Fi still works in airplane mode, so you can use the apps and check your calendar and contacts on your phone, but you won't get calls, texts, and notifications. When you turn off the airplane mode, you'll get any notifications and can respond in order of importance or at lunch.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Till then, we leave you in Allah's mercy. Be among you.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi, Aliyun Imami, Lafata illa Aliyun Imami, Aliyun Imami, Aliyun Imami.
لا إله إلا الله الله ربي
محمد نبي علي إمامي
لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي
You can talk it down, turn the other way. Fear the truth, but it won't go away. Can you hear it calling? Yeah. You can write it down, but nobody cares. It's an untold story of our biggest fears. It can reach you with no warning. Yeah, yeah. When the sun goes down. with my head in my hands, I'm here, and tears are falling, yeah. If I could right the wrongs, would you lend me a hand? I would make a difference to this beautiful land. If I'm nothing, I have my intention. When the sun goes down and there's nothing left around, can you feel it? Can you feel it? When your knees are on the ground, you may fear, but it's allowed. Are you listening? 'Cause I need forgiving. I need forgiveness.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Yearning for your cure, this humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, dear brothers and sisters, salam and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. Today's episode begins with a striking analogy from Imam Ali alayhi salam, peace be upon him. He said, "Be in times of fitna, which means trial and civil strife, like the young camel. It has no back to be ridden and no udder to be milked." In other words, when the world is in chaos, when people are turning on each other, when ideologies collide, when lies wear the mask of truth, be like the young camel. Don't allow yourself to become a tool, a pawn, or a resource for anyone's agenda. So let's break this down. Fitna in Arabic means more than just conflict. It refers to a confusing, morally murky situation where the lines between truth and falsehood are blurred. A time when taking sides quickly can make things worse. Psychologists call this moral confusion or cognitive dissonance. In these moments, the brain craves clarity. We want to do something, say something, pick a side, but the wise person pauses and protects their soul. Imam Ali Salam is not saying do nothing. He's saying don't let yourself be used. Let's look at some real life example. Imagine two co-workers are fighting. He's trying to get you to back them up. You know neither of them is completely right, but you feel pressured. If you jump in without clarity, you might lose both friendships, or worse, your job. Now think bigger. Political movements, social justice fights, and religious disputes. These can be worthy causes, but during fitna, good people often become the tools of manipulators. They are ridden emotionally, milked for energy, votes, or money, and then discarded. That's what Imam Ali alayhi salam is warning us against. Don't let your anger, loyalty, or even your faith be hijacked. So what can you do in times of confusion? Here are four practical steps. Slow down. Don't react immediately. In fitna, speed is dangerous. Second, withdraw emotionally, detach from the noise, until you gain clarity. And research quietly, gather facts, look at history, reflect deeply, and pray and stay connected to your purpose. Fitna often clouds our vision of why we exist. So the young camel isn't lazy, it's just not ready to be used. That's the metaphor. In chaotic times, maturity means staying light, hard to manipulate, focused on what truly matters. Because not every voice deserves your echo. Not every fire deserves your fuel. And not every fight is worth your faith. So Imam Ali Salam's wisdom guides us to stand firm by standing apart. Not in apathy, but in intelligent patience. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Joining us, the Gaza ceasefire agreement is the focus of commentators in the Hebrew media, as are the Zionist attacks on Lebanon, Israeli threats against Iran, and the death of Major General Mohammed Abdel Karim Al-Ghamari in Yemen after an earlier Israeli strike. These topics will be the subject of discussions in this episode with Dr. Mohsen Saleh, President of the International Association of Political Experts, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Dr. Mohsen, to this episode.
Thank you for having me, and greetings to the audiences.
The agreement to cease fire in the Gaza Strip does not mean the war is over, and therefore the occupation forces must retain the ability to carry out military operations against Hamas until it is eliminated. Dr. Mohsen, do you think that the occupation might also do escalations or launch or carry out any military operation against Hamas under the pretext that it does not surrender its weapons, which would mean resuming the war?
Well, first, there are many ambivalent responses to Hamas' existence in Gaza. Trump said if Israel was able to destroy Hamas, it would have done that, to destroy it.
Yes.
And Netanyahu, sometimes he says the war is ended, finished. And then he says, well, we are going to fight against Hamas, we are going to destroy Hamas if they are disarmed and all these things. It seems that Hamas is strong, very strong, till that day. They could not destroy Hamas. They cannot eliminate Hamas. Of course, they have destroyed buildings. They have killed civilians, women. They have starved the people there. But they could not stop Hamas from being a real power in Gaza Strip and continue to fight against the Israelis in spite of all the difficult circumstances and the pressure from some of the Arab states to bring Hamas into peace.
So if they are aware of this power that you're highlighting within Hamas, does that mean the military operations will go back? against Hamas.
It might. Every day, Netanyahu says if they don't return the bodies of the dead, we are going to continue our job and until we return, we bring back all of them. But it seems that there is today and yesterday there are news saying that there are some groups from Turkey or from the United States, from the Arabs, Egypt, sending some groups to find out these bodies. It doesn't seem that the situation is going to be going into peace. Escalation and keeping the situation status quo, like this, like in Lebanon, in Syria, as they have mentioned in some of the reports.
Yes.
So Israel in a great dilemma. Dilemma in terms of the internal political situation, with the international community, with the courts, with the criminal courts, and they have many problems inside. So until they go to election and they go for a new government, I think the situation will stay as is.
Okay, we remain on the topic of the Gaza agreement, where one activist in the Israeli right-wing camp saw the agreement as meaning the end of the war, as did Trump, who alone decides and gives orders regarding Gaza, as he said. What would make the Trump administration reluctant to approve a resumption of the war on Gaza?
Well, there are many reasons, actually. Probably, or most probably, that Trump thinks that he has achieved what he wants as a group, as a real estate, as having the decision to stop the war against Netanyahu. Netanyahu and his
right wing
and Smotrich and Benzir, they want to continue. And they want also to control the Gaza Strip. But for Trump, he has another plan for Gaza. He wants to change that into a place where he can invest money from the Arab world and from the British government and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner and Westhoff and all these capitalists. So he is moving towards stopping the Israelis and trying to disarm Hamas and trying to isolate Hamas from the from its political activities and social activities inside Gaza. Does that work? I don't think so. Hamas is very, very rooted in the social matrix.
How will he try to isolate them, Dr.
He will pressure Turkey and Qatar and Egypt, these three parties who signed on the agreement. And I guess the agreement is a secret secret order, in order to bring a new plan for Gaza and try to put in exile these people who are in some of the north and some of the shore, and put them in the southern part. So we are talking about a plan. We don't know a lot about it, but we know that Trump and his entourage, let's to say, trying to invest and to get money as a capitalist investment in Gaza. And the Israelis, they have something, let's say, existential or national existential being there in Gaza in order to protect them.
Yes.
And now there is, as I
but
said,
don't
ambivalent.
But don't you agree, Dr. Mohsen here, excuse me for interrupting, don't you think that one of the basic reasons for pushing towards a ceasefire is looking forward for normalization between Israel and Saudi Arabia to make that applicable?
Well, that might happen. Well, Trump alluded to that, and he said there are many countries, Arab countries, and they will like Israel again. So they hate Israel now in the West and in the Arab world, especially after these massacres occurred in Gaza. But now he thinks that
Pakistan and Indonesia.
Pakistan and Indonesia, they are participating in this. Well, the depending on the pressure from the United States, not because, and they opened a war against Afghanistan, the Pakistanis. It seems that the Prime Minister, so he is obedient to the American hegemony. But I would say that in Gaza is more difficult, inside Gaza, because Hamas, as you know, is a doctrinal movement which won't retreat from its ambition to liberate Gaza and to liberate the Palestinian people from all kinds of occupation or hegemony or the Western powers, but might
yes.
submit to some of the pressures from the Arab world and
However, Israeli, on the other hand, Israeli social media reacted to what activists call the catastrophe caused by Netanyahu's administration since October 7th and to its failure to eliminate Hamas. Other activists pointed to the need to punish Netanyahu in the next election.
Ilan Ostfeld, has it become clear to everyone that the goals of the war on Gaza have not been achieved to this day? The corpse of the kidnapped is still there. And Hamas is still alive and active there. Moti Shoshan, hundreds of our soldiers were killed in Gaza because of Netanyahu and his authority. And without him, what happened on October 7 would not have occurred, not even by 1%, at the hands of our weakest enemy. Tami Akira, after 2 years of hell in Gaza, Hamas still controls there, and Netanyahu's administration still continues in Israel. This is unbelievable. We must focus in the next elections either on the continuation of Netanyahu's administration and the continuation of Hamas in Gaza, which is a catastrophe for Israelis, or on forming an administration of peace with the Palestinian Authority. May there be an Israeli opposition leader brave enough to do this?
However, Israeli attacks on Lebanon continue, especially those the occupation recently carried out in southern Lebanon and Baal Bak, which were supported by commentators in the Hebrew media. One of them quoted the Israeli military establishment as saying that the attacks aim to undermine Hezbollah's strength. How do you interpret this Zionist military escalation against Lebanon, and what are the objectives here?
Well, I think the Israelis and whether the army or the settlers in the northern part of Palestine, I guess they are still afraid of Hezbollah. That means they are continuing their bombardment. They are trying to destroy today. They destroyed a house in Gida, they go destroy some places, factories, firms, and whatever they can do in order to harm the environment. The environment, they are mistaken because they are wrong. They are dead wrong because they think that there is separation between Hezbollah and the environment and the people. These are the people who are the fighters. These are the people who are not embracing only. They are themselves because, you know, the Israelis are attacking Lebanon, trying to destroy Lebanon and trying to steal their land, and they are trying to assassinate, and they assassinated many leaders who are entrusted in the whole national emblem from the nationality, from the Ummah community, and from all these families in the south, whether from Nakura till Shab'a and Kfar Shuba. So we are talking about an area that is really fighting, resisting the Israeli occupation from 1948 till now. So now they have only one choice, to withdraw from this conflict,
yes.
to withdraw from this fight against the people of Lebanon. They are not fighting Hezbollah, they are fighting the Lebanese people, they are fighting the Lebanese army, they are fighting Hezbollah as part, not only part, the essential part of the people's mind.
Okay, but
and psychology.
But do you think also, Dr. Mohsen, that these attacks can be identified as an Israeli escalation against Lebanon to pressure the Lebanese government? At times, Donald Trump is speaking highly of Lebanese President Joseph Aoun.
Well, the Lebanese government, some people in the Lebanese government, they go along with the American political roadway or the map road to in Lebanon and in the region. But they are mistaken as well, because Hezbollah and the people, they don't see any kind of peace or spirit of peaceful situation inside Lebanon. If you want to ignore this environment, you in the government, in the Lebanese
yes.
government, or you in the United States, or you the occupier, these people, they don't submit, they don't retreat, they don't say, well, we give up. They don't give up.
Okay.
They are continuing. So they are mistaken. They have been every day destroying, assassinating, killing, and
another important point. Yes.
And I guess they are still, they can't get what they want. No signature from these people to the occupier to say
another occupation. Another very important file, which is the announcement of the death of the Major General Abdel Karim Al-Ghamari, Chief of Staff of the Yemeni Armed Forces, following an earlier Israeli strike on Yemen, remained the focus of commentary in the Hebrew media, where the Israeli military establishment was quoted as being prepared to continue its attacks on Yemen, which it described as an enemy of Israel. Do you think that the Zionist attacks on Yemen will continue as they were before the ceasefire agreement in Gaza?
Well, before the ceasefire, a speech or words, or and after the ceasefire, something else, or the situation differs, because one of their conditions, the Yemeni, the first condition is to stop the attack and the massacre in Gaza, right? Also to open the passages to let food and other things go into Gaza. Now they have stopped, they have this fire, and the Yemenis stopped attacking.
Will the Israelis stop?
The Israelis, well, they have to stop, because if the Yemenis came back, then that would be most influential on their economy as well. Well, the Yemenis are insisting in order to see the Israelis stop the war and the aggression against all the people, even in Lebanon. Well, so the Yemenis are prepared to continue, because they get used to that, to attack the Israelis, because they see the Israel this cancer in the community's body. Well, they think that their duty, their responsibility to continue their war against the Israelis, even some of the Palestinians stop. They don't care about that. So they are prepared to now, and I guess they prepare more, and they have warned the Israelis in order to retreat and to stop, unless the Yemenis will go into a new kind of arms against the Israelis, a new weapons, drones. Well, they are prepared. The Yemenis are prepared more than the Israelis.
Okay, moving on to Iran, which today is working to rebuild its facilities that were damaged during the 12 days war. An Israeli commentator called for caution regarding Iran's quest for revenge against Israel, as he said. How likely do you think that Trump would support Netanyahu, Dr. Mohsen, in waging a major war or a major attack on Iran?
Well, first of all, we should know that the Israeli existence is shaky, not essential, while the Iranian existence in the history, in the civilizational achievements, if you want to say, not Israel. So Iran is prepared to continue, while the Israelis are not only shaky, their economy depends on the United States, their army depends on the United States, its power depends on the United States. Well, there are some signs that Netanyahu 2 days or 3 days ago contacted Putin and told him that we send a message to Iran that we don't wanna, we are not responsible, or we don't want to go into a new war with
yes.
Iran.
But do you think that Trump will actually support Netanyahu in any attack if he is insisting on an attack?
I don't think so. Otherwise, now Iran and China and and Russia are going to declare that all the, well, the resolution 2231, we are not responsible. The sanction against Iran will stop, and in terms of China and Russia and other countries. And we have now a very historical moment, political moment, in the relationship between the East and the West. And if Trump wants to meet Putin and the Chinese president, that means he won't agree on initiating any war against Iran, because he is claiming that he ended 8 wars in the world and he did not get the Nobel Prize. So it's funny to find such personality, the president of the United States, well, the superpower, behaves in terms of his instinctual trends and not according to the American interests, as Mersheimer would say, John Mersheimer, one of the erudite persons in the United States, and he's saying that the Israeli lobby is controlling, or at least having order on the parliament and the Congress and the Senate and the American administration. I would say that Trump would not go into a war in the near future in any way. He wants to recalculate after the close in the United States in terms of money-wise, and he can't pay anything or push for a war, because he would lose.
Okay. Our time came to an end. Dr. Mohsen Saleh, President of the International Association of Political Experts, thank you very much for joining us in this episode.
Thank you.
باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
فدعوتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناديتك أرجو غفرانا يا من ينجينا إحسانا. ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon the soul of Prophet Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear audience, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program, Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm your host Mahdi, and we are joined by Quran experts, dear brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam, brother Mahdi, and Assalamu alaikum to all the dear listeners of this program. I'm happy to be with you.
Thank you, brother. Well, dear audience, as you may know, the program Let's Recite the Quran consists of three main parts. First, Brother Muhammad is going to talk about the miraculous music of the Noble Quran. Then we are going to listen to a recitation recited by a famous reciter of the Holy Quran. And after it, Brother Muhammad will analyze that recitation. So the audience, please stay tuned. Well, in the first part, as I said, Brother Muhammad is going to talk about the miraculous music of the Noble Quran. Up to now, we have talked about some aspects of the miraculous music of the Noble Quran, such as the power of the letters, like Qaf, which is used in verses which talk about the severe things, such as Qiyamah, or the hereafter. We also talked about the length of the verses and some other topics. Brother Muhammad, let's continue.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Okay, we're going to continue our discussion on the music of the Quran. What is music? Music is something that is nice to hear. It's good to the ear. It's pleasurable. It's beautiful. And this is exactly what the Quran is. Quran is very enjoyable to listen to recite, and just hearing the sounds, the letters and the words of the Quran is very enjoyable. And that's why we say that it's the music of the Quran, because there is a harmony and order in the Quran. Anyway, so we talked about the length of the verses and how it has an effect on the impression that it leaves behind, and basically the effect that it has on the listener.
Yes.
Because, you know, if the verse is longer, usually it's used to tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
If it's shorter, it's used to, for example, talk about some other things, shorter concepts. Okay.
Such as when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala swears by different things that He has created.
Yes, and we gave the example of Surah Al-Shams, how it begins with very short verses, and in the middle, it gets a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
When it talks about the story of the people of Thamud, the people of Prophet Saleh, it gets a little longer. And towards the end, again, it gets shorter. And finally, it ends with وَلَا يَخَافُ عُقُبَاهَا, and nothing remains of them. Very short, as if they don't exist. And that's why the verse
perish.
Is so short. Yeah. It wants to depict this incident, this perishing of the people of them. Anyway, so another thing that really affects us, and it's related to the music of the Quran, is the order of the verses of the Quran. When you compare two surahs,
mm-hmm.
sometimes you notice that there are a lot of similarities between two surahs, and this makes you reflect on why this is so. For example, we have Surah Al-Waqi'ah and Surah Al-Haqqah. The beginning, the middle, and the end of these verses are very similar in terms of length, the letters that are used, the concepts that are mentioned. You know, both are about the Day of Judgment. They're both are about the blessings of the good people, the punishment of the bad people. It's very similar. We can compare them. And even in the very end, it's exactly the same. It's almost exactly the same the way that these two surahs end. For example, we have in Suratul Haqqah, we have in wa innahu lahaqqul yaqeen, and in Surah Al-Waqi'ah, we have in hadha lahuwa haqqul yaqeen. So there is a similarity. You see this?
Yes.
This causes us to reflect more on the verses of the Quran.
Because they both are talking about the same concept.
Yeah, whenever it's the same concept. Remember, sometimes the Quran purposefully repeats certain things, but in different ways.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad. Inshallah, we're going to talk more about this issue. The audience, stay with us. Now, dear audience, in the second part, we are going to listen to a recitation by Sheikh Hamdi Zamel. He's going to recite Surah Hud, verses 41 and 42. Let's enjoy it. Welcome back to your audience of IRIB English Radio. You're still listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran, and what you just listened to was recitation of verses 41 and 42 of Surah Al-Hud, recited by Sheikh Hamdi Zamel. And now, Brother Muhammad, let's analyze this beautiful recitation.
Sure. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This was a very good recitation by Sheikh Hamdi Zamel, and this is a very beautiful story and a very attractive story of the story of Prophet Noah, Prophet Nuh, peace be upon him, and how he was commanded by Allah to board his ark with every kind of animal,
mm-hmm.
two by two, and all the believers. He said, God told Prophet Noah to. وَقَالَ اَرْكَبُوا فِيهَا بِسْمِ اللَّهِ مَجْرَيْهَا وَمُرْسَهَا. He said, board the ship. He's saying this, Allah is saying this to Prophet Nuh. Embark the ark in the name of Allah. مَجْرَيْهَا وَمُرْسَهَا. Whether it move or be at rest. إِنَّ رَبِّي لَغَفُورٌ رَّحِيمٌ. Hamd al-Zamil, he recites this verse in Maqam. It's either Zanjaran or Shawq Afza.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It has Hijaz and Ajam in it. Okay. Zanjaran means Hijaz and Ajam. Shawq Afza means Ajam and Hijaz. It could be either one, but in my opinion, it's because it ends with the Ajam, it's Shawq Afza. So it's a combination of Maqam Hijaz and Ajam.
And Ajam.
This could show that, you know, the arc is, it's like it's moving
yeah.
a little bit and then resting a little bit. We could say this. Majareha and Musa, he makes the difference between these two words by using the maqamat.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
So this is, we could consider this, the maqamat and the way of using the different maqams, a part of the external music of the Quran. And this is what exactly it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The Prophet says, زينوا القرآن بأصواتكم. He doesn't say make your voice beautiful with the verses of the Quran. Make the Quran beautiful. Adorn the Quran with your good voices.
Good voice.
And this is what we, this is why we call it the external music of the Quran, because when you use the maqamat, you're adding to the already existing music of the Quran and you're making it more beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had tajweed. Now some tajweed points. Let's
good.
Go over. We have this word majareha. We see that there's a ra, and on the ra, we see that there's a small diamond-shaped object shaped written below the ra of majareha. What does that mean? It means you have to do imala. You shouldn't say, you shouldn't apply the tafkhim of the ra, because usually, whenever a ra has alif al-mad, you would have to apply tafkhim, right?
Yes.
This is the only place in the Quran where the alif al-ra with alif al-mad is not pronounced with tafkhim. It's pronounced with tarkib. Why? Because it's more beautiful when you say majareha, and also it's easier because the ha has tarkib. If you say majaraha, bismillahi majaraha wa mursaha, it doesn't sound good. It sounds better when you say majareha wa mursaha, because we have tarqiqs right after another. It's not like one.
Mm-hmm.
If you apply the tafkhim, it's going to stand out too much, and it's not going to be like.
And I think it's the only shape of its kind here.
There's another one actually, which is written on ta'manna, on the noon in Surah Yusuf. It's not written above the noon. It's written between the meem and noon of ta'manna. It means that while applying, it actually means that the word was originally ta'manuna, but because it's so difficult to pronounce ta'manuna, you pronounce one noon, you do idgham, you apply the ghunna, and while applying the ghunna, you make your lips rounded. Ta'manna, like this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is called ishmam of noon.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. That was the final part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions,